Economic Report on Drive Time.
Yeah, it's a weekly World Economic Report. As always, Dr. Jason Masioka is in session, Senior Research Fellow, University of Pretoria. Coming up, we're going to have a look at the economy shrinking. We've had done a bit about it already. The return of Zondo and the Africa Free Trade deal to go ahead. But Dr. Jason Masioka, welcome.
Thank you so much, Shafiq, for having me.
Stats SA report, I'm almost yawned when I read it because it was totally predictable, wasn't it?
Indeed, as we had expected. Remember, there was a huge drag on the both the oil industry, but also largely the exports as far as the global economy is concerned. So our exports declined significantly, and sectors which rely on exports, such as manufacturing, they've really shrunk significantly in just quarter one. The manufacturing sector shrunk by about 8.5%, and that is a huge drag. That came second, following the mining industry, which also is very connected to the international economy. And the mining sector for quarter one declined with 21.5%. So, again, you know, it's not unexpected, especially those sectors, but they obviously do deliver a significant blow to the economy. But, Shafiq, this is according to Stats data that they released today, but if you look at those figures, what we need to keep in mind is that they are figures that only capture January and February and March.
Yeah.
So we haven't really, we don't know the impact of the lockdown. And keep in mind that as much as what we see now, the figures released by Stats, they point to the, as I said, the sectors that link to the global economy by and large. Because if you look at sectors such as agriculture, the agriculture had, you know, quite a significant growth at about 27.8%. But what we are going to see in the next release, which will now capture the lockdown, we will see the real impact of our own now domestic lockdown and the impact that that had on the various, the dominant sectors of the economy. So the worst is yet to come, I'm afraid.
Yeah, look, I mean, what I find interesting is that, yes, we're going to see some bad numbers, but I think we can balance that against the fact that, that the economy since then has opened up quite considerably. Just if you drive around Cape Town now, I can only use that as an example. There's more cars on the roads, although there isn't, the rush hour isn't back there. Thank God for that. But I mean, restaurants are now selling food even though it's out of their doors. Shops are open. So there is movement. It's not as much as what there was before, but at least there's movement, and movement is a good sign.
Indeed. Look, we have started to open up, and I think the pressure was on the government to consider not just the fact that people were getting, you know, infections were rising and they are still rising, but there was a lot of pressure from the economic side where the private sector and everybody else was really not able to produce. And so I think the government gave in to that pressure, and I think there has been movement, of course, but My take is that what we are going to see, the next set of figures that we will get, GDP numbers, will probably be the lowest we probably will have this year, assuming that we are not going to have another lockdown. Because what we have now from Stats is really, it does cover the period that, you know, there was no lockdown and we were only affected by the international economic turbulences, which is, you know, closing of borders and so on. So that was, this is what we are looking now. It's really the impact of that. But my take is we will see the worst, and after that, given that we've started to open up now, the economic activities that run from beginning of July onwards, we will see those as part of the release of quarter three GDP figures. Keep in mind that there has been significant injection, of course, of money or liquidity into the economy, the $500 billion that was recommended. So that is going, depending on how it's rolled out, we are going to see the effect of that also in roughly quarter three, going into quarter four. So we are going to see a significant decline, and then I think in my assessment that we are then going to see quite a significant jump of the economy again moving to the right direction in quarter three, and hopefully then production can start to the evidence now in quarter four moving forward.
Yeah, so at least we will be able to claw something back. Then, interestingly, the Zondo Commission has started sitting again, and Popo Molefe expressing his frustrations going as far back as 2015. Just imagine if somebody in government would have listened to him 4 to 5 years ago.
It's very interesting, Shafiq, the kind of revelations coming out of Popo Molefe. It has been, well, firstly, now this is, of course, the return now of the Zondo Commission. It was locked down, part of it, because of the COVID-19 as well. The revelations coming out of Mr. Molefe are interesting, because partly what he suggests is that he pointed out the inconsistencies and the corrupt deals as far as tenders that were not aligned to the supply chain regulations were concerned. And when he pointed that out to the then Minister of Transport, Dipuo Peters, he thought that she would have his back. And his argument was that she needed to intervene. And especially there was a tension between Popo Molefe and the CEO, Lucky Montana. And it had everything to do with those tenders. So what Dipuo Peters then did, according to Popo Molefe, was that she went after Molefe and his board. She wanted to fire the board and side with the CEO. So then he went to the top six of the within the national executive of the ANC, which included, interestingly, the current president. At the time, he was a deputy president. And Mr. Molefe argues that he took the issue to the ANC top six and he didn't get much help there. So this really links to how the state itself, from the Minister of Transport to the top six, how even if they were not necessarily involved in the scandals, but they were complicit to what was going on within PRASA. And keep in mind, if you look at the figures, they are staggering. I mean, we are talking about tenders that were awarded irregularly, running up to billions. There's one for 3.5 billion, there's another for 4.4 billion. So we're not talking about small change here. We are talking about money that is almost equivalent to, budgets such as the national education budget and so on. Significant amounts of money that went out irregularly. And I think that is very worrying. We are yet to see what will happen and whether these individuals who were complicit, both from government and within the ANC, are going to say about that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm getting the feeling that Lucky Montana needs to actually get to have some bad luck, because he certainly needs to sit behind bars. It's quite irritating, isn't it, when you see people like that walking around. He used to enjoy the coffee shops at Sandton, he can't now, but because of COVID-19, but they're walking around as free as birds, when in fact they've committed criminal acts.
I think the public would like to see somebody take responsibility, and by that, we mean that somebody being hauled to court, and beyond that, being locked up for these kinds of economic crimes that they've really committed. And we haven't really seen much of the movement. The Zondo Commission has been going on. We haven't seen movement per se in terms of these individuals who are really your white collar criminals being called to order and being asked to either pay back the money or they go into jail. We haven't seen that yet. And I think the public is hoping, and not just the public, but also investors, international and local investors, they want to see that we really mean what we say when we talk about governance reform and cleaning out corruption and so on, and that this administration is different from the previous administration. Somebody needs to take responsibility. And suddenly, Lucky Montana has a lot to answer as far as PRASA's administration is concerned. And I think he has a lot to answer to the public, not just to the Zondo Commission. And we will hear what they will have to say. But I think the public will like to hear what he has to say about all that money that was spent irregularly when most South Africans were really living from hand to mouth.
Yeah, I mean, it's just absolutely obscene. It's economic pornography, I call it sometimes, so when we look at the numbers. The other thing that comes out of all of this is that the South African public is actually basically lost hope with the NPA. as cautious as the NPA has tried to move. And I mean, even the VBS thing hasn't really satisfied many people because they've arrested eight people, but they haven't arrested the second tier and the third tier of people who are as equally as guilty as the big bosses. And Lucky Montana's still walking around, and as are so many other former corrupt heads of SOEs.
You're absolutely right. I think there is that the public is becoming inert on what's really going on, because we expected very quick, and in fact the NPA itself had recommended that they were busy trying to arrest people, you know, immediately. We don't know what is going on now with the Guptas, what is the update. I mean, they are floating free somewhere around the world, enjoying the money that they stole from South Africans. And one of the really disturbing scenes that I watched was a couple of weeks ago, when South Africans were queuing for 350 rand for 3 or 4 days, waiting for that money, and they don't want to go home because you don't want to be jumped on the queue. And all you want is really to put money on the table, and yet at the same time you have these individuals who stole money that could have gone to these individuals, to poor South Africans, and yeah, they are working free. But again, I always come back, Shafiq, to my analysis of capitalism. That's how it works, because a poor person steals 1,000 rand and they go to jail for 6 years, and a wealthy person is not able to go, well, they can't go to jail because they can afford smart lawyers, they can afford to delay the court processes and so on. And that is really just how the system works. You have to be, and even when you go to jail, we've seen the history of these high-level court cases in South Africa, you are able to buy exit from prison quickly compared to poor people. You have to be able to afford to get out of jail. If you can't afford that, you're going to stay there for a very long time. But the senior individuals are able to, or the, you know, the senior politicians, they're able to get out of jail even if they end up there. And that's really just the way the system works. It does undermine the poor who have no access to the courts or to good lawyers in the first place, and they don't have access to resources. But those who have, they can always maneuver with the system. A good example is what has gone on with PwC, as well as KPMG individuals. When they were caught red-handed with their cases, they simply said, we can pay back the money that we stole from Eskom. And you and I, as just regular citizens, if you say, I'm going to pay back the money, they'll tell you, no, you need to go to jail first.
Exactly.
And then we can talk about paying the money.
Yeah, so it's sometimes it's not a fair world, is it?
Yeah, absolutely not. And that's just the way the capitalism system works. Nobody, and here we are talking of, again, hundreds of millions that are stolen from Eskom by your KPMG and your PwC. They were involved in all those scandals, but they can just say, no, we'll pay back the money. And they offer before any case is even made its way to the court. That's the way the capitalism system works.
Yep, it really does, can make a person quite mad at times. The Africa Free Trade Deal, according to what we've got, says it's going to go ahead despite the coronavirus pandemic. And of course, the Africa Free Trade Deal, we've discussed it quite a bit. At least it's moving forward.
Indeed, there has been some bits of delay, Shafiq. What happened was that they had set the 1st of July as the target for the operations to start, and 54 out of the 55 countries in the continent have already signed into the deal. And partly because of the lockdown of borders and so on, the African Union, a set of ambassadors in Addis Ababa, they made a recommendation, though, that we need to delay at least until beginning of 2021. So the new dates have shifted to January 2021, but it is going on. It is really just waiting for the borders to open. So there is a lot of commitment from 99% of the countries within the continent, and we hope that by December, perhaps the borders will be open. The argument that the ambassadors are making, and of course I need to say that the ambassadors they've made that recommendation. That recommendation is yet to be approved by the heads of state, but that really is just a matter of course rather than any significant decision. So we hope that by December the borders will open, and January the operations of the free trade, African free trade, can go on.
And of course, it couldn't come too soon, because surely it's going to help African economies once Mr. COVID leaves the room.
That's going to be a significant assistance to the economy. At the moment, we only trade internally. About 15% of our exports are within the continent, and yet we trade, there is upwards of 70% of our exports that go, or what we export that go to Europe. So we cross all our borders through the continent all the way to send our products to Europe. So I think it's going to be a significant help, not least around this time now, that a lot of African economies, along with, of course, the global economy, are going to go into recession. But opening up the borders will perhaps create an opportunity for us to minimize the impact of COVID-19. So it does come in handy, and I hope that that, you know, individuals and business people can take advantage of it.
Absolutely. And we're going to leave it there. Dr. Jason Masioka, Senior Research Fellow, University of Pretoria, Weekly World Economic Report. And Dr. Masioka will be back, he promises, next week. As always, thanks a lot.
Thank you so much, Shafiq, for having me. And stay safe together with the listeners.
Weekly World Economic Report on DriveTime.
With the COVID-19 pandemic ravaging the globe, we are all taking precautions, following strict hygiene practices and making every effort to stay safe. Many people are without work during this lockdown and are unable to afford food to sustain themselves during what is a most challenging time. We are preparing to provide millions of meals to those who need it most amidst this pandemic. Help us to assist in providing humanitized hygiene kits as well as much needed meals to the vulnerable communities of South Africa, the Palestinian and Syrian refugee camps in Lebanon, and the rural areas of Mozambique and Malawi. Africa Muslims Agency, inspiring the spirit of giving.
Jabulani Feeding and Learning Center, situated in Parkhood, a zone of poverty, a sad reality. But amidst this is Jabulani, a place of happiness. Support our feeding scheme, providing meals daily. Our self-sustaining projects include making of food for small and large events, hiring of our 100-liter pots, the sale of gas 5 kg to 19 kg, and a charity shop. We thank our community for your generosity, but more than ever before, we need your assistance. Donate today. Zakah, Sadaqah, and Lillah are most welcome. Visit www.feednation.org.za. Jabulani, let's feed the nation.
ظهر الدين المؤيد بظهور النبي أحمد ظهر الدين المؤيد بظهور النبي أحمد.
Few minutes to five, we're coming up for the news, some weather and some traffic, and Muhammad Tariq says he'll sing us all the way until 5 p.m.